Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building big businesses and even bigger lives. I'm one of your co-hosts, Sarah Reynolds. And today we have a special bonus episode, which is a continuation of my very, very, very special interview with one of my leadership icons, Mo Anderson. And we're going to continue the conversation that me and her had and eavesdropping on the conversation. Get out your pen, get out your paper, get ready to learn, because the next part of this interview literally changed the way that I lead, the way that I talk to my people. And I know if you take everything she says to learn from it, I know it's going to have an impact on you as well. So enjoy this episode and take some notes, and I will see you afterwards.
Let's talk about that, because I think that is what your nickname, not so much nickname, but your reputation, amazing reputation, is to be everybody, the Velvet Hammer.
Everybody in the company calls me the Velvet Hammer.
And you've said it twice now. So you start with love. So tell us the framework.
Well, let me give
for how you
some
have
examples.
Conversations.
When you work with an ALC, sometimes you have an ALC member that is rude and ugly in a meeting, or maybe you have an ALC member who comes late every meeting. So let's just pretend it's an ALC problem, or you have one that never comes. It would go like this. I would call you and say, Sarah, I need to talk to you. Let's pretend you're on my ALC. Sarah, I need to talk to you just for a couple of minutes. Can you slip by when you're finished doing whatever you're doing, if you have any time today or tomorrow? And you'll say yes, and you'll come in, and I'll say, here's the love. I would say, Sarah, I want you to know you are one of the best ALC members we have. You absolutely, when you speak with great wisdom. You have marvelous ideas, and I want you to know how much I appreciate you as an ALC member. We have a problem. You've been showing up 30 minutes late for the last four meetings, and because ALC is the role model group in the office that demonstrate the behaviors we want to see, that is unacceptable. So I have a question for you. Would you be willing to exercise great discipline for the balance of the year and seriously make an effort to be on time, because you're probably one of the greatest role models on the ALC? Would you do that as a favor to me?
Oh my goodness, no. That, like, we could end the whole masterclass. That was so beautiful. So, wow. I was and trying then, to write as fast as I could.
And then you'll say yes. And
yes.
I'll love. So it's like a sandwich. The bread on top is the love. The meat or whatever you've got in the middle is the dagger.
Yes.
Because I was very honest with you. That behavior is unacceptable. And here's why.
Yes.
Because you're a role model.
Yes.
Because the ALC is supposed to be the entity in a market center that demonstrates the behaviors we want. And then, see, you'll say yes. And then here's what I'll say. Oh, Sarah, darling, I knew you'd say yes. You are just the most awesome person ever.
Wow.
From that moment on, you won't be late unless you have illness or something bad happens.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Love,
so good.
Put in the dagger and then love.
Love, put in the dagger.
When I say put in the dagger, I don't mean to be mean. I mean to be honest. Mm. And give them a reason why what they're doing is unacceptable.
So good.
Like I dehired I dehired an agent the other day as the OP because he was so rude and mean and ugly to the staff. And I'm not going to put up with that. That's another standard.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't three strikes and out like I usually operate by. It was one strike and you're out. And he'd been with the Market Center for 13 years. Oh, he did 5 million in volume or whatever it was. And he wanted to meet with me because he knew he was in trouble and he thought he could con me into taking his side. And so I had the meeting with him. I had the team leader with me because I wanted her to see me dehire him. I thought she would learn something from it. So I said, you wanted to see me, so share with me what you want to tell me. And he did, and it was 7 areas of complaints about the staff. And so I wrote down each thing he said. And at the end, he was real snarky. And he said, I hope you heard me. And I said, well, let's check and see if I did. So I read back to him what I'd written down. And I was right on. And then I said, may I share with you something I'm concerned about? And he said, yes. And I said, I have really been concerned that during the 13 years you've been here, you've always been totally negative. You're not happy here. Mm. You never have been.
Mm.
So a decision has been made. That's always my line when I fire somebody. Dehire somebody is what I call it. A decision has been made, and I smiled and I said, it's so important to us that you find a real estate home where you're happy and you don't have to be negative. Today is your last day. And when we finish with this conversation, I want you to go in and pack up your things. And I'd like you to be gone by 5 p.m.
Mm.
And I wasn't mad. I wasn't angry. You know, it was just, and he started in. I mean, he started in. So I listened with a smile on my face. And when he got about a third of the way through his little tirade, I hit my hand on the desk. Did you hear me? A decision has been made. Go to your office now.
Mm.
And he went to his office, moved out, and we had so many agents coming to thank us for getting rid of him. You can't imagine.
Wow. Wow.
They were fed up with him.
So many times that's leadership, right? That's making the hard decisions for the better, either the things that need to happen to reach your mission, reach the vision of the company to protect the culture.
But it was based on a standard of being respectful to the staff.
Now, what made you not do the 3 warnings with him?
Because he had done it for 13 years and I was sick of people coming to me and telling me, because the previous team leaders, they were just scared to do it.
Mm. And so it needed to be done.
It just needed to be done.
But normally you follow a 3. Talk
about
that.
Yeah, I do. I usually follow a 3 strike program. Now, when I was CEO with a Market Center, it was strike number 1. Then it was the fierce conversation with love, put in the dagger and love. Strike number 2, maybe I gave them 6 months to increase their GCI or whatever the issue was. Then it was another fierce conversation. And then strike 3, was when I had legal prepare the legal letter to send out that I was putting them in default. And then after the default letter went out, I would follow up with them real carefully to encourage them, try to help them. And then when I knew it wouldn't happen because they shouldn't have ever been an owner anyway, then of course, when the deadline came, I didn't give them an extension unless I saw a certain amount of improvement. Mm. Now, with as CEO, when I dehired a person who was head of the marketing department because she was constantly telling people to bring her coffee and go get her paper for her. And she would do it in a condescending way.
Mm.
You know, and she was arrogant and ugly with them when she would do it.
Mm.
So I had conversation number one with her. And when I have that conversation, I go into the meeting with my talking points on a piece of paper. The points I want to bring out to her. And no matter what her response is, I don't care what she says back to me. I go to the next talking point. And it makes me stay on track. Because okay. We're not going to have a discussion. I'm there to tell her what I see and what she needs to do to correct it.
Mm.
And then in the second strike, one of my talking points will be if there's one more strike, I will dehire you. So she's got her warning. So the day came, you know, she could only behave about 2 weeks.
Oh.
You know what I mean? She could be nice and wonderful, but she didn't have the psychological energy to be able to be nice longer than 2 weeks.
Mm.
I've forgotten what her AVA, her behavioral instrument said, but so the day came and I set up the meeting. I didn't go over anything. I said, a decision has been made and we will help you move your things to your car. And she threatened me with a lawsuit and all that stuff, which she never did do. So
wow.
When they threaten you, you just have to let it run off of your skin like water on a duck's back.
Mm. Oh, write that down, someone. I'm like trying to write and then also listen here. I've got a page and a half just on how having a velvet hammer conversation and a couple of things that I want to highlight that you said that I want to make sure everyone heard you that I want to really shine the light on because I am seeing a big shift in, I think it's just a generational leaders that are in different generations that are leading now. You said something two or three times that's important. Most of these conversations, it sounds like, were in person. Is that right?
Oh, always.
Okay.
I don't dehire anybody unless it's, I don't have a fierce conversation or anything with anyone without it being eyeball to eyeball. Because there's a totally different dynamic that occurs on the phone or on a Zoom or whatever.
Yes. Now,
never, 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 never do that.
Okay. I think that's really important. I'm seeing a lot of leaders handle hard conversations like in different ways, but not face to face. And I'm such a big believer in that as well. And so I wanted to highlight that. The other thing you said
well,
that I want to make
it's
sure.
It's demeaning because if Gary had wanted to fire me and if he did it by phone or he did it some way, I would think he doesn't value me at all.
True.
if he valued me, he would be with me.
True. That's so true. The other thing you said, you know, love, then dagger, then love. One big thing that stood out to me, and I want everyone to hear this, is that love also equals appreciation for you. Like, meaning you didn't, when you role played that, you weren't just saying like you're great or showing type. You actually showed appreciation for who they are, appreciation for what they bring.
Yes, because it's all about the behavior. See, I said to you, that behavior is not acceptable, and the reason why. Did I value you as a person? You bet I did. I'd give anything to have Sarah Reynolds in a market center I owned.
That is...
because you're valued so much. But if I really love you and care about you, I'm going to point out to you certain things that you might do that if you quit doing them, you would even be held in more esteem.
So good. So good. So making sure that when we're having these conversations that we are talking about the behavior, not attacking the person.
Right.
It's the behavior.
Don't attack the person, because I don't care what the person has done. That person has value. You know,
so
just
good.
Like the guy I fired, I said, you know, it's so important to me that you're happy.
Yep.
And I'm going to set you free, so to speak, so that you can find that little niche where you belong.
So good.
Because he was
so
always
good.
Frustrated.
As a leader, it can be lonely. You're ready to grow, and you realize you need the right community to get you there. With Empire Circle, you'll be surrounded by driven, adventurous women who want more in business and in life. You'll get real-time feedback, personalized guidance, and honest advice from seasoned leaders who have built businesses and net worths in the hundreds of millions, all while living their big lives. If this sounds like the fuel you need to level up your business and your life, Empire Circle is absolutely for you. You can get more information at herbestlife.com by clicking on Empire Circle. Come and let's build your empire together.
It doesn't matter what someone does. They all have value.
That's
Mark it down. Quoting the one Mo Anderson. That's awesome. Okay, let's shift gears here. I mean, we could talk about this velvet hammer and learn from you so much. But I do want to talk about, you know, the first step of leadership is leading ourselves. And you already shared with us quiet time in the morning from 5 to 6. How else did you regulate your emotions? Like, so many times we have to have conversations, we have to deal with things, especially when you're 9, 10 on the aggressive scale. What did you do to regulate your emotions to where you could lead? Or did you not?
No, in my younger days, I would often get angry. And when you're angry, no matter if it's just a little bit of anger, you say something you shouldn't.
True.
And as I matured, because remember, in May, I'm 4 years away from 90. So I've had a lot of experience. And some of you are so young and you haven't had a chance to grow in that area. But I just really realized that, you know, every time I got mad, I really ran a risk. Because you may say something that could actually get you sued. For example, when I was CEO, now we were much, much smaller. We weren't at 190,000. every lawsuit that someone threatened to do, to file against us or did file against us, I always flew to their destination and sat down with them and eyeball to eyeball said, you know what, we don't need to make the attorneys rich. Let's just work this out. And I have a story in my book that I wrote. I went to Detroit to work on a very, very serious lawsuit that an owner had filed against us because our regional director made a mistake. And I went by myself. I didn't take our paralegal. I didn't take our lawyer. And I ended up in a very, very high class, high dollar law firm. And I was waiting in a conference room, and the head lawyer for our owner, he's about 6'6", and he weighed probably 250 pounds or so. He comes into that conference room, and I think because I was a woman, he let me have it. He told me he was going to take Keller Williams down and blah, 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 blah. And I just sat there with my stomach churning and my heart was beating fast, and I prayed for wisdom. And I just thought, oh my goodness, you know, I'm in too deep. I should have brought a lawyer. And then we went into this big conference room where the regional director and his lawyer, and there I was, and the seller. And when the seller walked into the room, I got up, went over, and gave him a hug because, you know, I'm a hugger. And I said, I'm so happy to see you. I just wish it weren't, you know, here. So then when we sat down at the table, his lawyer sat at the head of the table. And the minute everybody was seated, the good Lord popped into my head what I needed to do. And I began talking. I said, I'm the person who called this meeting. And I would like to tell you, and then I talked. And then that lawyer started yelling at me. So I stood up in my red suit.
Yes.
I stood up and I looked at our owner and I said, Mr. Owner, will you come into this conference room over here so you and I can have a talk without all this emotion and commotion? So he and I, and his lawyer told him not to do it, but he did it anyway because why? I had always treated him with a lot of respect. I hugged him. He couldn't turn me down if I'd hugged him. And of course, hugging is common in our company because we love each other. So we go in this conference room and I said, hun, let's go to your office and get this solved. Because I'm tired of that guy yelling at me. Will you do that just for me? And he said, yes. So at the table, he said, he wanted $400,000 from Keller Williams. And I put my hand out on his hand across the table. And I said, well, hon, you're not going to get that much. Now, I can get by with that for some reason. A lot of people can't say hun, but I can. I've just used the heck out of it. And when we went to the office to work it out, I got him to accept $25,000.
Wow.
And my legal team couldn't believe I'd done that.
Wow. But it all started with you treating him with love and respect your
when
entire...
When he walked into the room. And then I'd seen him before, you know, and I was always gracious and nice to him. that was before he sued us. But even though he sued us, I stayed gracious and nice. And then when he comes up with some stupid figure, I just said, oh, hun, you know you're not going to get that.
Wow.
So settled. I settled every lawsuit filed against Keller Williams during that 10-year period.
Wow.
We never went to court.
Oh, my goodness. But you had to have stayed, like, to even be able to do that, you had to have stayed calm and level-headed and...
Well, your heart may pound fast and your stomach may pound fast. It's anger that causes you to say and do things you shouldn't. Mm. When you're scared, like I was, it forces you to pray to the Creator for wisdom. Mm. And the scripture says, if you pray for it, you'll get it. And I I've gotten it like at the last minute. For example, we had two owners come and say, Gary made a meet with me because they wanted to get a business divorce. And back then, they were one of our best market centers. Mm. And one was Christian and one was Jewish. And they had been college buddies. And now they were mad at each other. So I brought them both. I had no idea how I was going to do that meeting. Didn't have a clue. And then right before the thought came into my head, get them in there and pray with them and melt their heart first. So I took them in the conference room and I said, you guys have been buddies for years. You have loved each other like two college buddies I've never seen. Now, Tom, you're a Christian. Dick, you're Jewish, and we worship the same God. So grab my hand, grab each other's hand, and let's pray for this meeting. And I prayed things like their friendship would be restored and that we could really come up with a good plan for their business divorce. I mean, for specific things.
Wow.
And then I told one of them to go out and wait. What I discovered is they had goals that were they didn't converge. One wanted one thing and the other wanted the other. So we figured out a possible model for them to use in getting their business divorce. And then they took the plan to their lawyer. He wrote it up. Everybody signed it. And they had an amicable divorce. And about 6 months later, I got a call from one of them. And he said, Mo, we just wanted you to know we've kissed and made up.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
So I could see quickly that they really needed to part ways.
Yeah.
Because one wanted one thing and the other one wanted the other.
And there's a way to do that to keep the relationship intact, which is important.
Keep the relationship intact.
That's so good. So I love what you said. So anger causes us to say or do things that we will regret, that aren't good. Being scared. I think this is so powerful, guys. I know you're hearing her, but I'm so pumped up. Being scared. She said to pray. You can also say, I pray as well, but you could pause. Some type of
seek a higher power.
Yes. Seek a higher power. Pause and think things through for wisdom, but do not respond in anger. Do not respond in anger. So time go by.
In my process of not getting angry, I would often get angry, but I wouldn't respond.
Okay, that's what I wanted
until
to hear.
Until that anger has gone away, because I've gotten in trouble too many times by saying terrible things when I was mad.
Yes. So you wouldn't respond until it went away. What would you say to allow for you to have the time? Is there a script you use?
Well,
or?
One, I would always make sure to try to get the decision or the next part of the conversation tomorrow.
Okay.
See, that gave me the night.
Okay.
To think about it and to pray about it and to figure it out.
So good. So good. Oh, this is a... So many amazing things. I could keep going. Well, we're going to keep going. We have a few more things. Is there anything that you, and I hate to use the term regret, because every failure.
Okay, I've got some regrets.
Okay, tell us.
When I built our first real estate office, which was way before Keller Williams was even in existence, giving birth to a company is very much like giving birth to a child. There's a little bit of pain involved.
Yes, so true.
And because I have a lot of drive, I missed a lot of my daughter's basketball games or football games where she was a cheerleader. Now, I didn't miss them all, but I missed some. And I missed some games where my son was running track. I didn't miss them all, but I missed some. And I really, really regret that. Because I could have shut down the office, gone to that game, gone back into the office, and worked after the game. But I was so deep into what I was doing that I felt like I had to finish it and couldn't go. And I really regret that. I'll go to my grave with that regret. I've forgiven myself, but I regret it.
So you guys hear her, fellow mamas? There's a lot of drive in us and leading other people, but making sure that that glass ball that Gary talks about, our family, is always priority on the calendar. Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that with us, because I know that's hard.
Putting it on the calendar, I didn't do back then. I knew she had a game and I planned to go, but I got caught up in the moment and thought I had to finish whatever it was. And see, if I'd understood time management, I would have put it in my book and I would have told everybody, hey, I have an appointment at 5 o'clock. I got to go.
Yeah.
Or 6 o'clock or 4 o'clock, whatever time that soccer game starts.
Yes. So putting, we're going to talk about managing our time in the first session, because leading ourselves first, right? And making sure that our family time is on there, and how to do that practically. That's so
powerful. And if you learn to delegate really well, it's a lot easier to leave for that soccer game.
Yeah.
But the issue is, in our Y4C2Ts, we say commitment in all things. That includes your children, that includes your friends, that includes everybody. So time blocking becomes a huge issue for a leader. Now, in time blocking, I have Kelly, who's been with me 18 years.
Wow.
I have her do it. So when people say, Mo, will you do such and such? I say, I would love to do it. Whether I can or not, I don't know. So call Kelly. She controls my calendar.
See, that's such a good script.
When there's a soccer game or a football game with my grandchildren, they're grown now. I have one great. Isn't that exciting? She's two.
Oh,
then I'll put whatever it is on the have Kelly put it on the calendar. So she protects me and she helps me with time blocking in such a way I often have people want conference calls, and she'll try to put maybe two or three of them together so I can leverage my time. So having a Kelly really helps.
Yes, for sure. Well, we are down to our last question, and with this group, and then Empire Circle has some time alone with Mo. And so I'm conflicted on what the last question can be, but not too conflicted, because our theme for my company last year was culture always wins. Culture always wins. And you, Mo, made the KW culture what it is today. And that, I believe, is so much of your legacy is in the culture, how KW was built and feels as a family. What do you think, if you had to pinpoint only one thing, which I know this is a really hard question, but what do you feel like you did as the leader to cultivate the remarkable culture that made it to where it became the number one brokerage? Because culture had to come first. How did you do that?
Number one, the Y4C2Ts, I made the regional directors memorize it. I made everybody in a market center that I owned, you had to memorize that. When we onboarded somebody, we told them the first thing you have to do is memorize the little acronym that tells how we're going to treat each other. The second thing I did was to teach them MVVBP, because that's the second pillar of our culture. We talk about how we treat each other and what's our mission, our vision, our values, and of course, our beliefs, which is the way we treat each other. And then I saw the six personal perspectives as the key to teaching people how to think. So I told Gary I wanted to make that one of the pillars of the culture, because there are four pillars, the Y4C2Ts, the MVVBP, six personal perspectives that should be taught in your market center or on your team forever. You don't ever stop teaching these, because these are based on eternal truths, and they will be true. Win-win or no deal will be as true 500 years from now as it is today. True. Personal perspectives, E to P will be true no matter what. And true. Everything in real estate changes. And when agents see that the foundational piece of your team or your company is based on four pillars, it gives them a sense of security. And then if you get busy and kind of forget those four pillars, they know something isn't quite right. And then I put together a collaboration group to come up with the fourth pillar, which is what is culture? And it describes what a market center might look like. It describes what actions or behavior they might have. And then see, the way we perpetuate culture in any company is to put a story with the point. Like win-win or no deal. You know, I love my story. I tell it 5 billion times during the course of the year. But you need a story with every single one of those points. And sometimes stories will cover two or three points. You need a story about self-mastery. Mine is the one about Carrie Underwood and all of her talent, and the tennis guy whose name I can't pull right now because I haven't told it in a while, who deliberately did not try hard to win at Wimbledon. They both had all this talent. One wanted to man make it, and the other one didn't. Self-mastery. And so you have to have a story, because you learn. How did Jesus teach?
Stories.
He taught the parables.
Yep.
And the way you teach is you explain the point and then you follow it up with the story, because that's what makes the intellectual mind remember the point.
So true. So true. So how you made KW Culture the way it is you taught, but then on the four
I held things- people accountable. When I was CEO, everywhere I went, I said, all right, everybody get up. And I'd make them turn off the PowerPoint or whatever it was to see if they could say the Y4C2Ts, to see if they could give the mission statement, to see. So they saw how I held them accountable. And when they were lousy, I said, we have a leadership problem in this region. All right, leaders, if I come back next year, I want this corrected. I wasn't easy on them. And then when I got them by themselves, I'd say, I can't believe how badly your people did. Why is that? Why? How did that happen? So see, I just put a lot of emphasis on it because I knew I had learned how to build culture in the office I built years and years ago before Keller Williams. And I'd learned of how you do it. And I was just being prepared for when Gary Keller accidentally found me.
That's right. That's right. So you told stories to make sure the points were came across while you taught to where they could see themselves in those stories. That's right. You know, I always say facts tell, stories sell, right? Meaning stories will make a bigger impact on someone.
Because the fact is the statement.
Yes.
That's based on an eternal truth.
Yes.
And in the story
is what will
is what helps them remember.
Yep. Take it from the intellect to the heart.
And Carrie Underwood was installed into the Oklahoma Hall of Fame the same time I was.
I know.
And I got to know her.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Well, guys, was that not amazing to hear that full interview between me and Mo Anderson? And now, if you didn't know who she is, now you know why she's one of my leadership icons. So much gold that she shared in that episode. And one of the things that I have adapted and changed from that interview was how to handle difficult conversations, how she became the Velvet Hammer. And if each of us can implement that one thing, not only will our people know that we love and care about them, but we will also get amazing results that will lead to us having a huge empire and at the same time, an even bigger life. So thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you got a lot out of it. And I want to encourage you, if you did, to please leave us a 5-star review so that we can continue to make an impact on those that are focused on having big businesses and, of course, even bigger lives. Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.